30 years ago, global warming became front page news in the United States. That was when a NASA scientist first told U.S. senators that carbon pollution was warming the Earth. This hour on IPR News, we discuss how we're doing communicating on the issue in Northern Michigan today and how we can do better at this divisive time. Plus, we'll talk about how people in Northern Michigan are taking action. Our guests are two local leaders on issues of climate change and clean energy. You can join the conversation by calling in during this live hour. All that's ahead on IPR News Radio, but first, the news. This is special programming on IPR News Radio. Good afternoon. I'm David Castleman. This hour, a conversation about climate change in Northern Michigan. More and more Americans want the government to find solutions to climate change. In Northern Michigan, many are looking for ways to take action locally. Today, we'll discuss how people of all backgrounds can work together to face the challenges of climate change and to talk to each other about those challenges. We have two guests today. Elizabeth Dell is the Great Lakes Regional Coordinator with the advocacy group, the Citizens Climate Lobby. She lives in Traverse City. Elizabeth, thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Jim McInnes is the CEO of Crystal Mountain in Thompsonville and an advocate for clean energy in Michigan. Jim, nice to have you on today.
Thanks, David. Good to be here.
And we'd love to hear from you this hour. Call in with your question or comment. The phone number is 800-681-5929. That's 800-681-5929. Elizabeth, climate change can sometimes feel like a faraway issue. You know, sea levels rising, threatening coastlines. But here in Northern Michigan, I think we can feel separated from that. How do you connect with people locally on these issues?
Well, it is impacting us locally. And I think people are becoming a little bit more aware of that. Fortunately, recently, the Record Eagle did a front page story in a Sunday edition about the impacts on agriculture. With the warming climate, we're getting more heavy rainstorms, more frequent heavy rainstorms that can be very disruptive to farmers. Those kinds of rainstorms can cause infrastructure damage. You saw what happened in Houghton, Michigan, just last weekend. That was a major rain event, just washing out roads. That's very expensive for all of us to deal with. Other things locally, when we have heavy rain events, that can create problems with E. coli at beaches. Lack of snow cover on the Great Lakes is causing more problems with beach erosion. And, you know, in a way that I think a lot of us can relate to with our really bad roads, the more frequent freezing and thawing during the winter along with rain is really wreaking havoc on our roads.
Jim, what do you think? I mean, how do you connect with people about an issue that, you know, is global and can seem like something that is hard for an everyday person to have an impact on?
Well, we see it directly at Crystal Mountain. We're in the snow business, and we've been there 33 years, and I've seen the fact that the winters have gotten a little bit shorter, generally speaking. They start a week or two earlier, later, and we end up having to make more snow, use more energy, tie up more capital in snowmaking equipment, that could be used for other things.
And, we were talking earlier that 30 years ago this week, a NASA scientist named James Hansen addressed the U.S. Senate and talked about global warming. It's often held up as a date when sort of the climate change conversation began in earnest in this country. Elizabeth, when did you first become aware of this issue?
Yeah, it was shortly after that when I was at Michigan State University and I wrote a paper about the greenhouse effect and global warming. And I was pretty alarmed then and never really knew exactly, you know, what was the best way to approach it or how I could best get involved. So it's an issue that I was worried about for a long time. And then I learned about Citizens Climate Lobby, which just felt like a great fit for me and for how I could address it, because it's a nonpartisan organization and they give you very specific ideas that are productive in building political will around this issue.
Can you talk a bit more about that? I mean, what is the role of the Citizens Climate Lobby, you know, here in northern Michigan and just mm-hmm. in the larger sense?
Sure. Well, we have a local chapter that started here a little over 5 years ago. It is one of, I think, 17 chapters we have now in Michigan. We have over 400 chapters. We are an international organization now with chapters on every continent except Antarctica. We do things to build political will in our communities. So we do outreach in our community to inform people about the issue, but also to talk about a solution, because talking about solutions is really an essential part of this. This is a huge problem, and it's overwhelming to people. And if you do not offer a solution while you're talking about the impacts of climate change, people are much more likely to just kind of bury their heads and say, what am I supposed to do about this? Because, mm-hmm. you know, we have to live our lives. You know, people don't have a choice. Many people don't have the choice to drive a car or not, for example. They have to. And there's no sense in making people feel bad about doing the things that they need to do to live their lives. What we can talk about are solutions that can reduce our impact.
Jim, you moved to northern Michigan a little more than 3 decades ago to take over Crystal Mountain with your wife. How have you seen the conversation on climate change and clean energy evolve here, you know, in that time?
Well, I think people have really become better informed over the time, and the options, you know, to deal with it have become much more cost effective even in the last 5 or 10 years, you know, some of the costs have been cut in half. So I think, as Elizabeth points out, that the more you can offer solutions that are viable, and there are plenty of viable solutions, we just need to focus on them, and cost-effective solutions, I think people are more interested in exploring these.
How did you end up, you know, as an advocate for clean energy here?
I studied electrical engineering in school, and I first learned about this issue back in the 70s without getting too technical. There's something called black body radiation, where basically it's...
That sounds extremely technical.
that's how the greenhouse works. You know, you have light that goes through the greenhouse, and then when it goes inside, the frequency changes, it gets lower, and it turns into heat, and then the heat tries to go through the greenhouse, and it doesn't mm-hmm. work. So the
essential mechanism of global warming.
That's essentially it. It's really just a greenhouse.
We've been talking about, I've been asking about ways that, you know, you've had success in communicating, you know, your message to people on climate change and, you know, maybe changing people's minds. I mean, can you think of some examples where you feel like you've had success and what were the ways that you did that?
Well, one of the things that we do, as you could imagine by our name, Citizens Climate Lobby, is we do lobby our members of Congress. We advocate for a federal policy that we call carbon fee and dividend. And just in a nutshell, it's putting a fee on fossil fuels and taking the net revenues and returning it equitably to American households. That's the very brief version. But so we do meet with our members of Congress. I just was in Washington, D.C. last week, where we had almost 1,200 people lobbying from across the country, including about a dozen or so people here from our area. And we meet with as many members of Congress as we can. Probably we had at least 500 meetings last week. So we're meeting with Republicans and Democrats. And I have seen over the 5 years that I've been going to Washington to meet with different offices. And that's, I meet both with Congressman Bergman, for example, or, mm-hmm. you know, whoever's representing us, as well as sometimes with members of Congress in other states. And I and others who have been there with me over the years have seen a real shift in the kinds of conversations that we're having. There's a definite growing awareness that, you know, there's no discussion about the science or whether this is real or it's very rare anymore. It's really about the solution. What is the best way to tackle this problem? So I know that we're making a difference by, you know, talking about it, just making it more personal to people, talking about the health impacts of, you know, not just climate change, but burning fossil fuels has tremendous health impacts mm-hmm. from all the other particulate matter. So just trying to tie it in different ways that people can relate to personally.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to a live call-in hour on IPR News Radio. We're talking about climate change in northern Michigan and clean energy, and we'd love to have you join in on this discussion this afternoon. You can call in. The number is 800-681-5929, 800-681-5929, and we'd love to have your question or your comment. Jim, I'll ask you the same question. I mean, what are the successes that you've had in, you know, being an advocate for clean energy and on these issues?
Well, we've worked with some of our legislators to try to encourage more clean energy being yeah. put into the power system. We've saved energy with our investments at Crystal Mountain. For example, we just built a new building, 31,000 square foot building, and we're heating it and cooling it with a closed loop geothermal system, where we take the heat of 50-degree water out of the ground, and we use it to heat and cool the building. So it's very, very energy efficient. Plus, we're using 56% zero-carbon electricity to power it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also, when we invest in snowmaking equipment, we try to buy, you know, energy-efficient transformers, large pipes, the kind of things that will help reduce our consumption.
Mm-hmm. The elephant in the room is that we're living at a very divisive moment politically in this country. Elizabeth, do you think that tension has affected the conversation on climate change and, you know, in this area, do you think? I mean, in your experience?
I think there's definitely a lot of reluctance, not just in our area, but in many places to talk about this issue. People don't talk about it very much in normal conversation the way they might talk about other political issues, because it has become this thing that seems to be very divisive, that, you know, people have this perception that, Democrats want to do something about it and Republicans don't. And that's really not the case at all. There's a lot of polling that shows that conservatives are concerned about this issue and want to see solutions and support things like, you know, putting a price on carbon or regulating greenhouse gas emissions, things like that. But I want to also add that, you know, there's one more sign of success is that we have been working to build this Climate Solutions Caucus that's in the House of Representatives. And mm-hmm. I know you did a story that some of your listeners might remember about Traverse City High School students who went to Washington, D.C. with us last year and asked Congressman Bergman to join the caucus. And he did. And it's you have to join as a pair, Democrat and Republican together. And we are now, I think I just saw an email that we have 80 members now. So that was after the last election in 2016, because of losing some people, we were down to 10 members. That's a pretty big growth in something that's, you know, a really hot topic. And some unusual people have decided to join in our. There's a representative from Florida who is very conservative by many measures, but he recently, you know, he joined the caucus, but also has been talking about climate change, not mm-hmm. just unprovoked, you know, raising it as a top level issue for him. So,
mm-hmm. Jim, what do you think about that? I mean, how has it impacted? How has the political climate impacted your work as an advocate?
Well, I'm involved with the Michigan Conservative Energy Forum, and we find that a lot of conservatives are concerned about, well, for example, reducing pollution and improving health. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to be working on clean energy, mm-hmm. Energy freedom. Some people want to, you know, produce their own energy, energy security. They don't want to import energy from other countries. They want local jobs. They want to reduce energy costs. And with solar and wind, you know, the costs are quite low. Much lower than coal and some of the and nuclear, for example. You can provide more taxes, tax benefits locally for schools by investing in your community and energy projects in your community, reducing energy waste. You know, I think as a business person, I'm always looking to reduce waste.
Mm-hmm.
You know, waste is bad for business, and it's very cost effective to reduce waste. Responsible stewardship. You know, I mean, we want to leave our campsite better than when we came. And we need to be accountable for our own actions. So there are a lot of reasons besides the climate change question to be engaged, no matter what side of the political discourse you're on.
We're going to go to the phones. We have Patrick from Traverse City wants to talk about energy conservation efforts. Patrick, you're on the air.
Hello. Hello there.
What's your question or comment? Can you hear us, Patrick? Patrick, you still there? Okay, we'll try to get Patrick back on the line. Elizabeth, just thinking broadly, I mean, what are your ideas for how we can better talk to each other, you know, about climate change at this moment?
Well, at our conference last week, one thing we did was a session on telling climate stories. And I think just, in casual conversation, bringing it up. For example, one person said he tells a story sometimes, and he has different stories that he tells depending on who he's talking with, maybe what he thinks might resonate. But, you know, if you're talking to some people who are passionate about pets, talk about how you think, I think of climate change as a pet issue. I'm concerned about my pet's health, and it's, we're getting more diseases like ticks that are affecting them now.
And humans.
Yeah, and humans, exactly. And also with, there's a lot of pets that are displaced as a result of weather events, like hurricanes. And so you kind of try to appeal to people at different levels or at different places, things that, shared concerns. So it's all about finding common ground.
Okay, I think we've got Patrick back on the line from Traverse City. Patrick,
hello?
Can you hear us?
Hello there.
Hi, Patrick.
I can hear you.
All right.
Hi there. Sorry about the technology issue.
No problem. What's your question or comment?
I wanted to share, I wanted people to think about the fact that there are a lot of things that we ourselves can do as homeowners to affect the climate without looking to the government for everything. 5 years ago, I installed solar panels on the back of my house. I drive, I use an electric car. We replaced all the lights in our house with LEDs. The installation of the solar panels have saved over 20 tons of carbon from being released into the atmosphere over the last 5 years. I have saved an average of $60 a month in my electric bill by doing this. And at the same time, the solar panels, when you install them yourself, instead of it costing $25,000, it cost me $9,000, and then after tax credits, it cost me $6,000.
Mm-hmm.
Already paid for themselves, well over. It's an economy. I grew up as a person who thought that you do for yourself what you can do. Well, every individual can make a difference. When you replace your furnace in your house, put a high efficiency furnace. Change the lights in the house. Put in LEDs. They're a dollar a piece now. It costs little, and they almost use no electricity at all. Don't look to the government for everything. We have to do these things ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you'll save bundles of money. I've saved thousands of dollars over and above the cost of these things by acting instead of just waiting for somebody else to do it.
Thanks for your comment, Patrick.
Sure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Jim, what do you think about what Patrick was saying? I mean, have you seen people sort of connect with that idea?
Absolutely. I think an important point he made is don't wait for the government to do it. I mean, we can do this for our own self-interest and save money, make the place healthier. An example, we have a conference facility at Crystal Mountain, and back in 2012, we put in LED lights. They paid for themselves in 9 months. And they saved enough energy to power a Chevy Volt 200,000 miles a year. So you can really make a big dent with energy efficiency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was just at the Clean Energy Conference this morning here in Traverse City, and there was a woman, Carla Walker Miller, from I think it's Walker Miller Energy Services in Detroit, speaking, and she focuses on energy efficiency, and any energy that you're not using is the cheapest energy. So there are a lot of programs out there for people to free programs. To have energy audits done and even have, certain amounts of or certain low-flow shower heads and, you know, free LED light bulbs. And, you know, these things are very cost saving. And, you know, it's really the first place you should start when you're trying to do something about clean energy. I include, you know, energy efficiency, solar, wind, et cetera, clean energy. But energy efficiency is the best place to start.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Lisa on line three. Lisa from Traverse City wants to hear more about the Climate Leadership Council. Lisa, you're on the air.
Great. First, I just wanted to thank you guys for this this show. It's excellent. And yes, I had heard that there's a group of Republicans who are advocating for a price on greenhouse gas emissions, or at least carbon. I wondered if one of your speakers could speak to that.
Thanks, Lisa. Elizabeth?
I think maybe she's talking about the Climate Leadership Council, which formed a little over a year ago. They are advocating for a plan called Carbon Dividends, and it's actually, the plan was written by former Secretary of State George Shultz, former Secretary of Treasury James Baker, and they this plan is very similar to what Citizens Climate Lobby is calling for, which is to put a steadily rising fee on fossil fuels. I'll give you a little bit more detail about it now,
sure.
If I may. So a steadily rising fee on fossil fuels, it would be paid at the source, so at the mine, the wellhead, the port of entry. So it's very few, perhaps, I think I've heard numbers of fewer than 2,000 points of collection, for example. So it's very efficient and simple to administrate in that manner. The fees that are collected from that, they'd be paid by the fossil fuel companies, that would go into a fund, and after administrative costs, all the net revenues would be distributed equally on a per capita basis to American households. And mm-hmm. the purpose of that dividend is to help particularly lower and middle income families as we're transitioning. Some energy prices certainly will increase as well as some costs of goods. So we want to help protect families, particularly the most vulnerable, from those rising costs. And there's research and modeling that shows that this will, for a vast majority of households, do just that. And have, for a lot of other households, have just a very minor negative impact. And the last thing that is where we have similarities in our plans is a carbon adjustment tariff at the border. So for carbon-intensive goods that are imported into the country, they would there would be a tariff. And that money would be collected and rebated to American manufacturers of similar goods. Because we're concerned about disadvantaging American businesses because they're paying a carbon mm-hmm. price and other countries are not having to do that. So doing this will protect them. It will encourage American businesses to continue manufacturing here rather than going elsewhere to manufacture where they could do it cheaper. And it will, very importantly, encourage other countries to institute their own form of carbon pricing, because what we really need is to have this happening globally where we have carbon pricing going on everywhere. And this is just, you know, one, economists agree that putting a price on carbon is the most effective way to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. It's only one thing. There's many things that need to be done, but this would be a very, very important step.
Let's go back to the phones. But first, let me just say that you can call in during this live hour here on IPR News Radio. We'd love to hear from you this afternoon. The phone number is 800-681-5929. 800-681-5929. Let's go to Chris on line two. Chris, you're on the air. What's your question or comment?
Good afternoon. I have a kind of a policy question. I'd like to get an update from the panel. We in Leelanau County, my family, have been off-grid entirely for more than 25 years. And at one point, maybe in the mid-90s, early 90s, we got a grant from the state of Michigan of $5,000 to replace our wind electric generator with a new one. And I think those programs have disappeared. And I'm really, you know, not very enthusiastic about what's going on at the federal level. But could you guys give us an update on what kinds of assistance, direct assistance, grants might be in existence currently?
Thanks for your question, Chris.
I can't answer at the state level, and this is far out of my expertise, but I do know just from this morning some things that I heard. You know, there have been at the federal level tax credits for wind and solar, for example, rooftop solar on households and things like that, and those and some other kinds of credits, which are going to be in effect for another couple of years. But that's really the extent of my knowledge of specific programs.
There's an EV credit, $7,500.
Yes.
For an electric vehicle.
Electric vehicle, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Chris, thanks for that question. We'll have to look into that further. Jim, you brought up earlier that you're a member of the Michigan Conservative Energy Forum. You know, thinking about what kind of work you do there, you know, do you think it's a good idea to just promote wind and solar and not mention climate change, you know, when talking to someone who might be skeptical about, you know, whether climate change is real?
Well, we don't spend most of our time talking about climate change in that group. I mean, I think it's pretty well accepted, as Elizabeth said earlier, by many people. We really talk about the other benefits and, you know, the energy freedom, being able to, you know, some people want to produce, just like the caller we had, wants to produce his own energy and, you know, freedom. We want freedom to do what we want to do. That's one of the principles our country is based on. We want, you know, reduce costs. And now with, you know, the cost of clean energy, it's very cost effective. But we need a balance. We need a diverse grid. So we need nuclear power. We need gas. We need coal. We need a diverse. It's like most anything else. Diversity gives you a lot of benefits. So while clean energy has a lot of benefits, it's nice to have a diverse power supply. And we talk about that.
At those meetings? I mean, you said you don't talk much about climate change. I mean, why not?
Well, some of the members that we talk with are not, you know, that's not a reason that they're interested in clean energy. I mean, there mm-hmm. are a lot of reasons to be interested in clean energy, and some people find climate change to be one, and others find, you know, energy security and these other areas to be good reasons.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to a live hour to talk about how Northern Michigan is dealing with climate change and what the conversation is. You can join us by calling this phone number, 800-681-5929, 800-681-5929. We'll be back in a few minutes with Elizabeth Dell of the Citizens Climate Lobby and Jim McInnes of Crystal Mountain. But first, we're going to hear the perspective of a young Republican on climate change. Dylan Berger is going into his sophomore year at the University of Michigan. He's also the president of the university's College Republicans. I first reached out to him a month ago when I learned that U of M's College Republicans were supporting a plan to tax carbon polluters. College Republicans and Democrats from across the country have gotten behind a group called Students for Carbon Dividends. But this week I learned that U of M's College Republicans no longer supported the group. I spoke to Berger this week about that decision and about his overall views on climate change. Dylan, thanks for making some time to talk.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's my pleasure.
Why did your group decide to retract support for that plan?
That's an excellent question, David. Well, let me give you a very simple answer on that one. We retracted our support because we did not believe that a $40 tax on every metric ton of carbon was going to be beneficial for the people of this nation. We looked at the numbers that showed 400,000 jobs would evaporate. Half of those jobs would be manufacturing, hitting states like Michigan the hardest. We looked at the numbers that showed a 13 to 20% increase in electricity costs. And we looked at the numbers that showed a $2.5 trillion subtraction from our GDP. So it was truly a quite easy decision once we got the facts straight because, you know, as college Republicans, we're supposed to be advocating for the working people. And those disastrous economic results would not be beneficial for our people, especially the people of Michigan.
What kind of debate was there within the group, you know, when discussing whether to support this?
Well, we all understood that climate change is an important issue. We're not denying that climate change exists, but there was a debate as to the cost versus the benefit. But once we really dug into those numbers, I mean, it became very clear that the cost of implementing this plan would far outweigh any benefits that we would receive. So it was truly a quite easy decision once we dug into those numbers.
According to recent polling by Pew, younger Republicans are more likely than older Republicans to agree that the earth is warming mostly due to human activity and that government should do more to reduce the effects of climate change. What do you think about those issues?
Well, I certainly agree that the climate is changing and human involvement is certainly involved. Where I don't agree with many establishment Republicans and the entire left is that in order to correct this, we have to essentially sabotage our economy. I would like to see our nation deal with climate change in a manner that improves our economy, in a manner that strengthens American jobs in the free market. And 200,000 manufacturing jobs disappearing is certainly not an acceptable cost to minuscule changes in our climate. So I'm open to more funding of green technology and the like, but I'm certainly not open to completely derailing Michigan's economy right as we're emerging from the lost decade. That is something I will never support as president of College Republicans.
In general, I'm interested in talking about how, you know, Americans can better communicate on the issue of climate change. What would you like to see change in the overall conversation about climate change going forward?
Well, first off, I think we need to be far more sensible on the issue of climate change. You know, you have these liberal activists and even some establishment Republicans who believe that we've got to sabotage our entire economy to improve the environment. And that's just not the case. You know, we can take steps to improve land conservation here at home. We can take steps to erase some ocean pollution that's going on. We don't have to wreck our economy in order to improve the environment. I truly believe that's a false question there. And we need to take steps immediately to ensure that any efforts to deal with climate change don't sabotage the American economy.
What's your hope for how the country and the world can deal with the issue of climate change?
Well, as I said previously, we need to invest more in green technology, you know, and the government can take a leading role in that. But more importantly, we need to let the free market take a lead. You know, you look at companies like Tesla that are innovating, you know, they have done that through private money. They have done that through the free market. And we need to continue allowing the free market to work its magic from my point of view.
That was Dylan Berger, a sophomore at the University of Michigan and the president of the school's College Republicans. We're back with Elizabeth Dell, the Citizens Climate Lobby, and Jim McInnes of Crystal Mountain. Elizabeth, what about Dylan Berger's point that we'd be hurting the economy with a carbon tax? How do you talk with people who have those concerns?
Well, he cited some numbers that I'm not familiar with I can't say where.
Yeah, and just to be clear, the plan he's talking about is different than the one the Citizens Climate Lobby supports. Is similar, but
it is different, but they're very similar. I haven't seen any studies that show those kinds of impacts. We did a study by an organization called Regional Economic Modeling, Inc. Several years ago. They are a very reputable organization that works for governments, universities. They are rock solid as far as their credentials. And, I mean, including working for, you know, oil and gas industry. And so they're not partisan at all. And they modeled our policy of a fee of $15 per ton of CO2 emissions that would increase at $10 a year. And they looked at the impacts on our economy, and they had much different kinds of numbers. They showed that after 20 years, 2.8 million new jobs would be created. That's not a huge number, but it's not a negative number. Certainly, you know, some areas do better than others, but it also showed that GDP would rise. And I'm trying to remember some of the other, I should have jotted down some of the other numbers he was mentioning, but basically, you know, it was for a policy of this magnitude, the results are quite positive, particularly when you take into consideration the huge costs of not acting. And this is, I'd like to point out, I mean, this is a free market approach. And economists across the political spectrum, I mean, a huge majority of them agree that the most efficient and effective way to address this, to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, would be to put a price on carbon. So it's not just left wing and a few, you know, Republican elites. There's a growing number of conservatives and libertarians that really agree in this free market approach. I mean, the other approach is regulations, and that's not particularly appealing to conservatives typically, nor is it the best way to handle something like this. And, you know, when you have former Secretary of State George Shultz saying that we should be taking out an insurance policy to address this, this is what they did in the Reagan administration with the Montreal Protocol. When there's an ozone hole growing, and we acted as a nation to address that with other countries, and it has been very effective.
You can call in with your question or comment this hour. The phone number is 800-681-5929, 800-681-5929. Jim, what do you think? What's your perspective on that overall question of how, you know, some of these measures could affect the economy? And
well, I look at what Warren Buffett does in Mid-America Energy, and he's planning to be 100% renewable energy by 2020. And Iowa has about 37% of their electricity is provided by renewable energy, and they have some of the lowest costs of electricity in the country. So, and I know Warren Buffett wouldn't, I'm a long-term fan of Warren Buffett, and I don't think he would do this and invest in clean energy if he didn't think it was very worthwhile. Also, you can see that Consumers Energy has recently come out with a pledge to eliminate coal, reduce natural gas to 10%, and increase renewable energy to 43% by 2040. So you can see one of Michigan's major utilities is definitely heading in the direction of clean energy, and they're doing it because they think it will be good for jobs. It'll be good for the economy.
Let's go.
Oh, I'm sorry, David. One other thing that I should mention. Last week at the Citizens Climate Lobby International Conference, two representatives from Students for Carbon Dividends, which is what the U of M Young Republican president was referring to, that plan, they spoke to us, and they're very excited about this plan. And I think that I have the feeling that they're going to be bringing a lot more college groups on. And it's not just college Republicans. There's a number there, I think there are 25, if you take out U of M, 25 college Republican groups that are supporting it. A good number, but not as many, of college Democrats and some other campus environmental groups. And also just this week, former Senators Trent Lott and John Breaux from Louisiana and Mississippi came out in favor of this carbon dividends plan. So there's really a lot of movement behind this form of carbon pricing with the dividend going to American households.
Let's go back to the phones. Dave from Alanson has a comment or question. Dave, you're on the air.
Hello. I'm calling in regards to fuel usage that we have on our highways. The state legislature increased the speed limit on a lot of the expressways, and they know full well that that's going to burn more fossil fuels when they did that, and then people don't adhere to those limits anyway, and I've heard of a number of people think, well, now they can drive at 85 on the expressways instead of 75 because they can get away with it. And then people buy fuel-efficient cars and think they're doing something good for the environment and then still drive exceedingly fast in a lot of cases. And consequently, their fuel mileage they think they're saving is illusory, I believe. But anyway, that's basically my comment, and be nice to just make people a little more aware of that, I guess.
Thanks for your comment, Dave.
I had to say.
Thanks, Dave.
Sure, thanks.
Jim, I mean, what are some of the most important ways that people can be responsible about their energy use besides, you know, driving slower?
Well, you know, we talked about some of them earlier. Replacing your light bulbs, that's a big thing with LEDs. Shutting off your lights at home, putting on, you know, we've done all these things at Crystal Mountain, putting on inexpensive control systems so that when you walk out of the room, the lights shut off. Try to buy energy efficient appliances. Walk to work if you can. Bicycle if you can. Like, I bicycle to work sometimes. And it's good for you, I think. It's good for your health. It's a lot of fun. So there are a lot of things that people can do. Drive an electric vehicle. I had a Chevy Volt. I had one of the, I think, the second Chevy Volt in northern Michigan back in 2011. And I could go about 35 miles on a charge. And today I have an electric vehicle, and it's charged with 56% zero carbon electricity. So I can go a long way with it, and it's clean energy.
Elizabeth, what are the ways that you advocate for people to get involved, whether we're talking about, their car or things at home or, other ways they can get involved?
Well, we focus, because we're focusing on federal legislation, address things other than individual actions, that you can take in your own personal lifestyle, which is very important. I don't want to discredit that at all. But our organization, as I said, is nonpartisan, and we are one of our missions is to empower people to get involved in their democracy. And it's really it's life-changing for a lot of people. I've seen it happen. And, I mean, I had never 5.5 years ago gone and talked to a member of Congress, and now I'm doing it regularly. They are there to represent us, and it is our job to let them know what we think. I know that can feel like a big job a lot of times to people. It can feel overwhelming. Sometimes people feel like they have to be an expert in things. You don't have to be an expert in everything. You just have to, follow the advice of people who know what is, who do the research and say that this is a problem and have solutions to offer, and just let your Congress members know what's important. But our volunteers do things to build political will, like writing letters to their members of Congress, writing letters to the editor, writing op-eds, meeting with editorial boards and asking for endorsements. We meet with community leaders. Jim McInnes and Crystal Mountain Resort is one of our business climate leaders for Citizens Climate Lobby. So engaging with different people to bring them to the table on this issue in different ways. We have met with Congressman Bergman a number of times, and we bring people of interest to him, so that they can share their stories. So just, letting people feel empowered that their voice does matter, and it really does. I mean, I've seen the difference it makes. We collect messages to Congress when we go out at events and, table and talk to people about our work. And then we can take this, big stack of letters to our members of Congress, and it really has an influence on their thinking.
And talk to your friends and vote. Don't forget to vote.
Yes.
Jim, one of the things that you did was to host several conferences at Crystal Mountain to talk about energy, the economy, and sort of our environmental future as well. What do you think you accomplished with those conferences, and what were some of the challenges that you faced in sort of leading, getting involved in that way?
I worked with Aaron Wiesner of Local Future, and he was really the organizer, but I helped him. These were called the Conference on Michigan's Future, Energy, Economy, and Environment. And we had three of them. We had one in 2008, one in 2009, and one in 2013. And for the first one, the whole idea was to get business leaders, governmental leaders, environmentalists, community leaders, just the general public all together to hear a variety of inputs from a variety of different players in the world of energy and ecology. And so we brought in, for example, in 2008, we brought in Tony Early, who was the CEO of DTE Energy, to talk about nuclear power. Because at the time, there was an awful lot of bad press about nuclear power, and there are some reasons for that. But we wanted to help people better understand how nuclear power plants work and what are some of the benefits of that. And so he was kind enough to come up and talk about that. We also brought in Dr. Robert Costanza, who is one of the world's renowned ecological economists. He was with the Gund School of Ecological Economics at UVM. And we had him talk about how the economy is really totally a function of the environment, to help people understand how the economy works with the environment. And we brought in people who are experts in wind energy. We brought in the plant manager for the Ludington Pump Storage Plant. We brought in people talking about local food, just a wide variety of subjects.
And what were if you can sum up the challenges of that, I mean, where could you do better next time if you were to do it again?
Well, the challenge was to get the people, the nuclear power people, to sit into the ecological economics session and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think that, you know, that was?
Well, people seem to gravitate to their own area, but our real goal was to bring them all together and expose them to a variety of things and to encourage that dialogue, just like what we're trying to do today.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Rick is on line two. Rick, you're on the air.
Thank you. One thing, I think everything's kind of interconnected, health, environment, and all that. So some of the things I wrote down here, I got into macrobiotics and I changed my diet around. And from what I understand, most of the methane, not trying to embarrass anybody, I think from what I understand is caused by cattle.
Right.
So people could eat more grains. And I learned you just put a little seeds on your rice, a little soy sauce, and I'll tell you, it tastes pretty darn good, and you feel good afterwards, you know. And then other things, you know, maybe plant more trees, putting more oxygen into the air. Try to tolerate more. When it's hot out, try to tolerate a little if you can, you know, without using the air conditioning all the time. Or as soon as it gets cold out, you know, don't have the heat blasting inside. I mean, I've been in places inside the wintertime, and if it was that hot in the summertime, they'd have the air conditioning on. Mm-hmm. You know, so but there's some let me see what else do I have here. I believe that's mostly what I wanted to say. But
Rick, thanks.
Those things, yeah.
Thanks for your call, Rick. You're listening to a live call-in program on IPR News Radio. We're talking about how we can better work together and talk to each other to work on climate change. You can call in with your question or comment. The phone number is 800-681-5929, 800-681-5929. Elizabeth, what are some of the ways what are some of the ways you've been able to connect with people, you know, from different backgrounds, you know, in your experience as an advocate? I mean, people, you know, how do you reach people who maybe feel like they don't have the time or the money to make a difference?
Yeah, it is a challenge. And I don't know if I have a great answer, I guess, for, you know, we are an organization that, you know, people can do a little for or a lot. It doesn't cost anything to become a supporter for Citizens Climate Lobby, for example. Anybody is welcome to go to our website, citizensclimatelobby.org, and join without any cost. And you just get updated on what we're doing. You can have the opportunity to participate in our local chapter meetings, depending on, you know, if you have one near you, a chapter near you. And there are always, you know, some simple actions that do make a difference. You know, phone calls to Congress, as long as we're not barraging them constantly, I think that gets a little overwhelming. But some select targeted reasons for calling. But yeah, engaging more people is definitely a challenge. We have a guest speaker. We have a national call every month, our organization does, for all of our volunteers and chapters. And we have a guest speaker every month. And this last month, it was somebody from the Environmental Voter Project. And talking about trying to reach environmental voters and how, you know, overall voters put climate change, it's way down there on their list of concerns, which is a little hard when you're somebody who's really worried about this and how it's going to impact, you know, your child. I have a 12-year-old, and so I'm always kind of thinking about this issue through his eyes and what life is going to be like for him, you know, in 30 years.
Jim, what motivates you to, you know, to keep working on these issues?
It's important, I think. It's something I'm really passionate about. Our industry is concerned about, I mean, our National Ski Areas Association industry members, most all the resorts are concerned because, you know, skiers are our customers. And we also try to let our customers know, hey, this is really important. If you like to ski, which is a lot of fun, we need to reduce, you know, we need to kind of control this climate change.
We've only got a few minutes left. Jim, I want to ask you about sort of the regulatory environment, because I know, you know, your specialty is thinking about, you know, clean energy and ways that we can be more friendly towards it in the country. You know, we've only got a few minutes left, but I want to make sure you have a second to talk about, you know, what you're pushing for, you know, on that front at this point.
Well, there's a board called the Michigan Utility Consumer Participation Board, and I've been the chair of that board for 7 years now. And our mandate is to fund interveners in electric and gas utility rate cases on behalf of residential ratepayers to try to keep the rates down. Now, we used to be able to consider the environment in that, but that was stricken in the new energy law. But the reality is that the low-cost solution is often the clean energy solution. As Consumers Energy has just pointed out to us, and they're preparing what's called an integrated resource plan, which will be a five-year plan on how they plan to phase down their coal plants and phase out coal plants, phase down natural gas plants, and ramp up energy efficiency, something called demand response, which is shifting the load to a different time period, and renewable energy. So they're going to have 43% renewable energy because they think it's good for business. And right now we're seeing costs, for example, for utility scale solar in Arizona, 2.4 cents a kilowatt hour. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really a low cost. Where now if you use natural gas, it's probably about 5 or 6 cents a kilowatt hour.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I think what we try to do is our mandate is to keep the rates down as best we can. It's not an easy job because the utilities have a lot of control, and some of them do better than others, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
But we think a lot of the solution includes energy efficiency, renewable energy. And there's actually a report out each year, comes out in February, on the renewable portfolio standard and how Michigan is done. And you can see that the numbers for, like, wind energy, for example, you know, it's about 4.5 cents a kilowatt hour. And this is a report from the Michigan Public Service Commission. So there's a lot of data supporting the fact that the costs are low for clean energy.
Elizabeth, you know, there are also people out there who are engaged and who maybe are feeling disappointed and maybe losing heart and losing hope. You know, what do you say to those people who feel like, you know, we're not doing enough and we're not going to be able to solve this?
I feel really hopeful because I can tell that we've made a lot of progress, and I'm feeling hopeful that, not certain by any means, but hopeful that our legislation for carbon fee and dividend or something very similar to it will be introduced perhaps in the next, I'm expecting in the next Congress. This is just a sense I have based on the progress that we've made and the kinds of conversations that we're having. I have to feel hopeful and operate that way to keep plugging forward. And I hope that, you know, that will get more people riled up about this. But also there's just so much momentum. I mean, I'm seeing so much. I pay attention more than a lot of people do, the average person, but I see a lot of momentum for our policy. And I think that when people start hearing more about carbon fee and dividend, one thing that I'd just like to share, because I think it helps kind of paint a picture for people, the modeling of our policy showed that in the first year, a family of four would get a $288 dividend for the year. But after 10 years, it would be $3,456. So this is a chunk of money that people will be getting in their pockets that they can then spend on other things, which is why we see job growth. So it's not all bad news. And the other thing is, Dr. James Hansen spoke to us at our conference last week, and he's still hopeful. He says that if we can begin reducing our emissions 3% a year by 2021, he thinks that we'll be okay. And so I'm counting on his expertise to be right and just hoping that we get some effective big policy initiated soon.
Any last words, Jim?
No, I think putting a price on carbon, as Elizabeth has said, I read it, a lot of these economists say they are pretty much all in agreement that that makes the most sense and something we need to do, because what it does is it helps to fund some of the, in essence, it's a price for the externalities that burning fossil fuels, you know, things we don't count, but there are a lot of externality costs, and this helps to offset that. So I think it's a great idea.
Unfortunately, our time is just about up. Thanks to our guest this hour. Elizabeth Dell is a Great Lakes coordinator with the Citizens Climate Lobby. Elizabeth, nice to have you on.
Thanks very much for having me.
Jim McInnes is the CEO of Crystal Mountain in Thompsonville and an advocate for clean energy. Jim, thanks for being here.
My pleasure.